We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everybody, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Victoria Venturi of Paper Epiphanies, which is a paper and lifestyle brand that empowers women. Prior to being her own boss, Victoria worked in PR and marketing for really large brands such as Fox, Disney, Warner Brothers, and Hilton Hotels. And on today's episode, we're talking about balancing retail and wholesale outreach, how to build relationships with the press, and the importance of honing in on your messaging and the why behind your brand. Hey, Victoria, thanks so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. So I want to start at the beginning. Prior to starting Paper Epiphanies, you worked in public relations for some pretty big brands. I mean, Fox, American Idol, Disney, the list kind of goes on and on. How did you end up in the stationery gift industry from your PR background?
It was sort of a funny long road. I actually moved to Los Angeles in 2007 to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So I came out, I got my SAG card. I did the stand-up circuit for about a year and a half. And I love to write all of that comedy, but being in bars with greasy old men every night and, you know, having to find a way to support myself while doing that, it wasn't what I had planned for myself. So I put the stand-up comedy aside and ended up becoming a publicist and did a lot of business writing, but really missed that sort of humorous writing that I had done during stand-up. Mm-hmm. So I started the line sort of after I lost my father in 2013. I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to do something. I miss this creative outlet. How can I tap back into that sort of humor and get back to that place to fulfill that creativity? And so I started Paper Epiphanies, and it just sort of took off. You know, I did my research, both myself and I went to paper camp, and sort of, I didn't go in blindly, but I definitely, once I had all of the information I needed, I did jump in head first.
So you knew you wanted a creative outlet. Did you always know that you wanted it to be paper and like these gift items, or did you have a hard time honing in on that?
I always loved paper. I loved, you know, I had brands that I had, you know, Sugar Paper was a big, you know, coming up during that time in, you know, 2007. Mm-hmm. In Los Angeles. And I loved that. And I always wanted, and I appreciate beautiful things. And I really wanted to create something that was beautiful, but also sort of resonated with me in terms of tone and vernacular and humor, mm-hmm. and the way that I spoke to my friends. So I sort of was like, how can I merge these two aesthetics, this beautiful paper that I love, with something that really sounds like me?
Yeah. Well, you've definitely done a good job of that. I think your line is very much a reflection of who you are. So tell us about the mission behind Paper Epiphanies. Why do you create the work you do?
Sure. You know, I've always sort of had the vision for the line, and it takes a while to, you know, really be able to produce all of those things you imagined you could create. I think when I started the line, I had big visions of what I still do, of what I want it to be. But really for me, it was being allowed to talk the way I talk. I think women have a lot of rules placed on them. You know, when I was coming up in PR and in the corporate world, I read 85 books, you know, like Girls That Wear Pink Don't Do Well and Don't Be Too Bossy, Be Nice. And, you know, all these books geared for women in business. And men don't have that. Men don't have to read books on like what suit to wear to, you know, close the deal and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't exist for them. And so for me, I was like, I want to write for women, and I want, you know, 90% of my buyers female. So I don't care if I'm alienating men. Screw them. Like, this is a line for women, about women. Maybe it's brash at times, but that's who we are. We're complex people. We're complex creatures. And sometimes we want to be very beautiful, and sometimes we want to say fuck. And that's sort of what the line's about. And on the back end, when we launched Kiss My Pumps in 2016, that was really the sort of for benefit arm of Paper Epiphanies. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, more office goods. They're a little more workplace appropriate. And they have a charity match to Girl Up at the United Nations Foundation. And, you know, I've done a lot of cause marketing in my past, and there's definitely a benefit to it. But for me, it was also very important to not just promote that we support women and we empower women, and that's sort of our mission. But I also mm-hmm. wanted to put our money where our mouth was and say, okay, if that's really what we're trying to do and help women, how can we, even if it's, you know, in a small way, give back and support that cause?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, the company really came full circle when I launched Kiss My Pumps, because I was able to have that fun sort of irreverent side with our greeting cards, but then also really tap into that mission and that why for our company, which is empowering women. And that really sort of made it, full for me.
I think it's great to hear you talk about your target market in such a distinct and powerful way, to say that, well, I might be alienating men, but that's okay because they're not my market, is really empowering, I think. It's empowering for me to hear too, because I think there's so many product-based businesses that when you ask them, who's your audience, who's your target market, they say everybody can use my products, you know? And so to hear you so distinctively talk about, no, this is my core audience, this is who I'm making my products for, and this is who I want to support and help through making these products, I think it's really admirable. I applaud you for that.
Thank you. And I think, starting out, you have to have thick skin in some regards. You know, I recently moved to Portland, Oregon, which is a beautiful city, but there's lots of, you know, rustic, manly stores, and that's not the brand we have. You know, we're a very feminine, powerful, brash line, and lots of pink, lots of black, but we're definitely for women. And so you have to be prepared once you identify that target audience to say, okay, we're not going to be in this store. We're not going to do this. There's going to be people that don't like our brand, and that's okay, because you're not for everyone. Right. And I think I've really resonated with my, social media following and things like that, because I am specific. And so the people that are following us, they know what we're about, they know what to expect, and they know that it's for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps it not be washed out. And while it might not be for everyone, it's definitely for some people, and those people love it.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, once you have honed in on that audience and you do speak to them directly, it impacts the bottom line of your business too, because you're clearer in your messaging and you're talking directly to the people that want your products, and they're going to buy more regularly than if you're talking to a more broad-based audience. So you've come back to Paper Camp a few times to talk to our class about your experience with growing your business. And one of your key messages has always been to know your why. And I really love when you talk about this. Can you elaborate on that here for our audience?
Sure. So I just sort of touched on a little bit about what Paper Epiphany's why is, and that's to empower women, to support women, to make women feel not constrained by the rules that society makes for them, to let them have just as much liberty as men do, whether it's through a greeting card or a notepad or, the way they conduct themselves in a business meeting. And knowing your why, I think, is really important, because in a business, well, in any business, but especially in stationery that is very saturated, I think it's really important to have an authentic voice and know why you're doing what you're doing. I think it's really easy to lose your way and misstep if you keep looking to the side and thinking, what are they doing? What are they making? That's cool, or that looks nice. And instead of really just trying to focus on what your why is, why are you getting up every day and making these awesome products? Why do you own a company? Why do you want to be successful? And even if your why is, I want to, support my family and create a company for myself that gives myself flexibility, or because I love nature. I mean, it doesn't have to be some huge overpowering, existential point. It just has to be your why, what motivates you and what makes you unique. Mm-hmm. And I think when you tap into that, it really allows your company to have a more holistic vision of itself. And people recognize that. They can say, oh, your business stands for this, or this is what they do. And I think that really helps buyers and just consumers relate to your company.
It also helps you as the business owner make decisions as you're moving forward in your business. Because if you have a very clear understanding of your why, that every decision you make should be driving back to that same goal or that same mission or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And so it makes it easier to say no to things. It makes it easier to say, that's not part of what we do.
Absolutely.
Which is key.
It's key. Yes. I would say that saying no to things is almost more important than saying yes, or
totally,
or deciding on how to say no to things is more important, because, every day we're inundated with opportunities, but choosing which ones are the right ones.
Absolutely.
It's important. So, okay. So can we talk about your business model a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. You currently sell retail as well as wholesale, and you pretty much started selling wholesale straight away. Was this a hard decision for you to make, or did you know going in that you wanted to have both arms of your business?
I think maybe it was part naivety, being naive, and part knowing what I wanted. But I do think that I did a lot of research before starting. And I sort of knew that because the way I write, our line is unique because of the tone of it, because of the humor, because of the writing. You know, we don't have any illustrations on our cards. So knowing that everything was being produced by me, I felt like I had it within my control to sort of launch both the retail and the wholesale simultaneously. Also, coming from a PR background, I sort of knew that if our line was successful from a retail perspective, we would have stores inquiring, and I wanted to be knowledgeable going out the door. I wanted to know what my minimums were. I wanted to know how to make my sales tools look professional to begin with, so that when I started out, I really was cohesive and professional. And yeah. I think, you know, for me, really 90% of our business is wholesale. So I've never had the issue where the consumer facing side sort of usurped that. Now, definitely as we grow, we focus more on SEO for our website and how can we continue to build that source of revenue. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, wholesale really took over right away quickly.
Mm-hmm. So that's where you focus most of your time and effort, because you knew that's where the dollars were coming in.
Exactly. From. And then, you know, as we grow, we try to continue to, you know, build other avenues. But to begin with, wholesale was the number one driver of our revenue. And so we focused on those sales tools and growing our rep base and all of those things to really help us continue to, you know, go where the money
expand.
Was.
Yeah. You know, it's retail, as you know, retail and wholesale are completely different go-to-market strategies, and they require different, you know, different marketing and different schedules and different ways to reach that audience. So how do you balance that? I mean, it sounds like you spend most of your time on wholesale, but you also still need to be nurturing your retail clients as well. So how do you juggle that? I mean, your messages are going to be different to each audience.
Totally. I think something that we struggle with and that we still are trying to work on is our email marketing campaigns. Mm-hmm. We don't do them that often, which is good and bad. We're definitely not inundating people, but we definitely have really high open rates and really high conversion. And because of that, we should really be focusing more time there. And we're just not. We don't have the bandwidth with our small team right now.
Right.
But that's really an area where you can see the divergence between the way we speak to our consumer and the way we speak to our wholesale clients. Mm-hmm. You know, we different wording, different promotions. Even our, I would say our Instagram is really more for the public than our buyers, you know? It's really sort of our why. It's what we're about. It's our tone. And that sells itself in terms of, you know, our buyers know when they see our new product. And obviously there's different times of the year when we make our Instagram, for example, heavier to buyers, like leading up to NSS. We use the hashtag and, you know, we use it as a platform to attract them. But then throughout the year, the majority of the time, we're really just speaking to anyone that's listening that cares about our why.
Yeah. I think Instagram's the tricky part where people get a lot of, they have a hard time. I mean, emails, yes, you can send emails to your wholesale audience that are different than your retail audience. But on Instagram, you have one handle, which is speaking to both audiences. And so it is a juggling act of, you know, when you share sneak peeks of cards, well, if you're sharing sneak peeks of holiday now for your retail, your wholesale audience, your retail customers aren't really that interested in it. So it's a balancing act for sure. But I think you've done a really great job. And to talk about it as you did in terms of seasons, there are certain times where you are talking to that wholesale audience more so in your social platforms. That makes a lot of sense because there are definitely buying seasons within the wholesale side of things. So
totally. And like you mentioned, like seasonal, something we don't share, you know, we wait to share, you know, Christmas until we're really closer in. And inevitably, if we share a sneak peek of a card, we have someone email us, say, oh my gosh, can we get the mom minivan card? And, you know, it's not up yet. So, you know, being able to, you know, not miss that call to action too. When you post on Instagram, even if you're not saying sell, 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 which usually does not work on Instagram, you want to be authentic. But when you post a card, you have to be prepared that people want it, which is good. And so you either need to have it on your website or you need to find a way to communicate when it's coming so that you don't miss those buyers or those consumers that are interested in that product.
Absolutely. I think you've done an amazing job of marketing your brand. And I think your pre-show mailer, like I've seen a lot of your wholesale stuff, so I can't really speak to the retail side of things. But on the wholesale side, your pre-show mailers and the catalogs you've done and the emails, like they're very fluid. They're very cohesive. They're very on brand for you. And I think you've done a tremendous job of that. How does your past PR background, how do you feel like that's helped you in the business? Has that played into these marketing strategies you've laid out?
I think, I mean, 100% definitely. In terms of when I was doing PR actually for a fitness company many years ago, one of my sort of roles within the company was cohesion. How do we make our website and our packaging and our materials all look the same? how can someone know this is coming from us? And I think in an industry like stationery, where there's not a lot of brand loyalty, which is a good thing. You know, if as a consumer, most consumers will walk into a store and they're like, this card is funny, I want to buy it. Mm-hmm. Rarely do they turn it over and they're like, oh, this is Seven Jeans, I got to get this card. You know, it's like, there's not right. as much of that brand identity with the average consumer. So the one good thing with that is amongst our peers, there's not as much negative competition because we all know that when somebody buys a greeting card, it helps all of us, which is a great thing. That being said, if you're a brand like myself, where we really are typography based, you have to find a way to identify yourself, whether that's through signature color or, you know, a really cohesive feel and tone. And so we've used the marketing materials we have and our photography and our sales tools to try to, you know, be a vehicle for, you know, communicating that messaging, communicating that visual branding. You know, just as important as it is what the art's on your card, all your materials should be visually branded as well. Yeah. And let people know that it's coming from you. So if they see the pink catalog in the stack, they're probably going to grab it because they think it's Paper Epiphanies if they're looking for us. And vice versa, if you're a brand that's very natural and holistic and, you know, has muted colors, that's what your sales tool should look like as well.
Yeah. What about the PR outreach side of things, meaning the press outreach? You've done a lot of great stuff there too. Can you talk a little bit about the success you've had?
Sure. I think some of that success is from relationships that I built over time, which is something that you just have to, you know, sort of do in the PR world. That being said, when I came into the stationery industry, I didn't know any of the editors in the stationery world, but I used those same techniques to build those relationships in a authentic way. There's nothing negative, I always say that, about networking or about getting to know people. It's about building a true and honest relationship. And you want to build those same relationships with editors and with journalists. And that is making their job easier. You know, an editor is on deadline. A lot of our editors in our industry have children and their own issues and their own family life. And all they're trying to do is get their shit out the door and make it look good, just like we are, right? So how can we make their job easier? How can I say, hey, you know what? I don't know what projects you're working on. I don't know what articles you have coming up, but here's what Paper Epiphanies is working on. We're working on female empowerment. We're working on brush lettering. We're working, whatever it is. So how can we help you? Let us know what your current articles are, and maybe there's a way we can tap into it. So really approaching PR in that regard, like not being scared of it, not being overly persistent in a way that's not helpful. You know, if you continue to email a food reporter your greeting cards, you're not going to be successful because A, they don't write about greeting cards, and B, you're making their job more difficult. So it's how can you help each other? How can you, you know, reach out to Stationery Trends or, you know, whatever outlet it is that you think is a good fit for your brand? How can you figure out what they need, what they're working on, and give them the tools to include you in their articles and make their job easier?
I love that. I would also say that, let me ask you your opinion because I have my own thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on follow-up? Because I think that there are a lot of parallels between the follow-up we do with our retailers that we're trying to sell, I'm sorry, the wholesale clients that we're trying to sell to, and also the media. Like, people are afraid of follow-up. So what's your advice on the press side of how much follow-up is too much, and how can they make their follow-up more than just, I'm a firm believer they shouldn't be following up and saying, hey, just checking in. Like, you need to be adding value with every touch point that you do. So what are your tips for follow-up with the media?
So I've never had an in-person interview or meeting with a journalist that I didn't call them on the phone. Now that being said, that's not like, hey, I have a new greeting card. Hey, like, that's not the point. The point is, okay, if you're going to be in New York for the National Stationery Show, let's say, and you have a reporter that you have a rapport with and you say, hey, I'd love to grab you for coffee. If you shoot them an email, it's most likely not going to get responded to. Not because they are looking to ignore you, but because they have a lot going on. So like you said, the ask has to be specific. If you're looking to meet them, if you're looking to have them come by your booth, and you know them, it's a different approach. I would say if you've had a relationship with them, you know them, you're on a, you know, a first name basis, I would say call. I would say, you know, if you have a specific ask, if you have an event, if you have something you want them to attend, leave a message, call them. If you don't know them, I would say have a very specific email and not one that you've sent to 85 people. It might take you 2 hours longer. Look at the past articles they've written. Reference those articles. Hey, I saw you wrote this amazing piece on the, you know, millennial voice for the New York Times. Well, I can't tell you a brand that's more millennial than Paper Epiphanies. And here's why. You know, reference their work. They mm-hmm. then they know, okay, this person might be pitching me, but they know who I am. They know what I've written, and they're relevant.
Paying attention. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's so important. So I would say, in terms of making a media list, which is essentially just the people you want to reach in the media, mm-hmm. a media list with 10 people that's well thought out, that has specific references to articles, is way more effective than 100-person media list where you're just sending blank mass emails.
100%.
And in our industry, you know, unlike, you know, when I was doing PR for Fox, which was like any television, any article or any outlet in the world could be written about Fox, I think stationery is a little bit more specific, and that's helpful. You know, we can really build relationships with our key media. We can hone those relationships, and we can, you know, be in a conversation. Sometimes I even talk to some of our editors and I say, hey, I'm thinking about launching this. Have you seen this in the industry? Have you mm-hmm. seen people that, you know, no, I haven't, or, oh, that is, or, you know, they can be a resource for you.
They absolutely can. Or, hey, we saw that 10 years ago and it didn't work, and here's exactly. why. You know, I mean, that's valuable information.
Totally. And a lot of times they say, wow, I haven't. And when you do that, I'd love to be the first to write about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, and sometimes you get nothing. Sometimes you have a great relationship and it's not relevant, and they don't write about you. And this just happened to us for a Valentine's Day hit. We sent them something last May, and now we were in their Valentine's Day roundup, you know, in 9 months later. And you just don't know when that relationship is going to become of value. But Gary Vaynerchuk has a book called Jab, 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 Right Hook.
Yes.
And that expression, and to me, is very relevant, which means, you know, you do a little work, do a little outreach. And then at the end, you come in with the right hook. And when you need the ask, and you're reaching out to someone that you know, you've talked to, and now you're saying, hey, I think we'd be a good fit. Yeah. And that's really when that success comes through.
It's kind of the same mentality of, there was, I can't even remember who it is now. I'll have to look it up again. But there was somebody talking about sales funnels, you know, in a traditional sense of like, add value, add value, add value, then ask for something, you know, and it's the same kind of thing. I mean, business is built on relationships. So I love hearing you talk about it from the standpoint of working with the press and, you know, letting them know that you're paying attention to their work, letting them know that you can contribute and that you're there to help. The other thing that I've had some success with regards to the press is, if I found out, you know, I asked them what they were working on and how I could help and kind of showed them what we could do, if they came back to me and said, I'm actually looking for something else, this is what I'm looking for, I've connected them with people that have that something else they're looking for.
Absolutely.
Because again, that's letting them know, look, I really care about what you're doing and I'm trying to get you the right people here. So, totally. And too, it helps my friends that are, you know, then going to get press out of it. So you gave some really great examples of call to action for people that are going to a show like NSS, of meeting up for coffee or come to the booth or whatever it might be. For people that are maybe not doing wholesale or not going to shows, what are some call to actions that they might be able to ask for in more of a general sense, like on their day-to-day life and business?
In regards to PR?
Yes. Yes.
So I think one thing that I would recommend everybody does is set up Google alerts for not only your brand, but for the industry keywords, mm-hmm. like for us, like female empowerment or whatever it is. And then you start to get alerts from what reporters are writing about those topics. You know, if it's Made in America or tree free or whatever it is that your brand is about, having your finger on the pulse and knowing who's writing about it, in what regard, and then keep track of those reporters. That's a really good way to sort of be able to know who's having the conversation. And then I think just, you know, making yourself unique. So if you have an adult coloring book, why is it special? You know, is it helping people with autism? Is it giving back? Is it, you know, the first time that Led Zeppelin was in a coloring book? I don't know. But, you know, finding something that just like, hey, we're launching 11 new cards. No, that's a lot of cards. I'm not saying that's not a good launch. I'm just saying things that are important to us. As business owners, the news might not give a shit about, okay? Like, you know, so kind of knowing where those steps are and those tent poles in your company. Like when we launched Kiss My Pumps, we did have a charity match. And so we did a press release. That's the only time in our company where I've actually done an official press release. Because in my mind, everything else might be somewhat newsworthy, but it doesn't really, you know, value a press release. And I think that's a buzzword. People are like, should I make a press release about going to NSS? It's like, well, if you're doing your debut at NSS, you could maybe do a press release, but what does that look like? Or if you're not doing NSS, if you're, you know, launching at a craft show or you're doing something else, like just figuring out how to make yourself relevant. And also knowing that like local news is just as important. If you want to get on broadcast, you know, which seems crazy, local news needs a ton of filler. I mean, here in Portland, they're talking about squirrels and rain every day. Okay. They need some stuff on the news. It's like, those are kind of lower hanging fruit that will be more open to talking to you if it's not a national outlet. Still get you great word of mouth, especially in your hometown. And I know a lot of our alums have had success with sort of, you know, local broadcast.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great way to start, you know, reaching out. Or if you do have a pop-up shop or you're opening a store, anything like that, like that's, you know, that's helping the local community and the economy. And that's something the news wants to know about. So don't be afraid to look within your own circles. Like, do you have a church newsletter? Do you have a community newsletter? Do you have local television? Do you have, and expand out that way too, which makes it less daunting and still great ways to get the word out about your company.
Well, and it gives you time to practice your messaging too, because a lot of what I'm hearing from you is it falls back to the marketing, it falls in the messaging, and it falls back to the why. And so the clearer you are about what you're talking about and who you're speaking to, I think the easier it is to pitch yourself, whether it's to the press or to even, you know, customers. So that's awesome. All right. I want to transition this conversation a little bit. You have had a lot of growth in your business over the last few years. You've added sales reps to your team. You've worked on some licensing projects with some big brands. You've continued to grow the wholesale and retail channels too. You know, through all of this, I'm sure you've hit some unexpected speed bumps. I know I have. Can you share a transitional time for Paper Epiphanies and how you kind of got through that?
Sure. I mean, I think that we have transitional periods multiple every year. I think for me, the biggest transitions are always when we see a spike in growth. You know, we have certain number of employees, certain number of boxes, certain number of tapes, certain number of whatever it is, and we figure out how we have our mojo. Okay, here's how many orders we get every week. Here's how we're doing it. And the second we get a massive order or more orders are coming in or something changes, we're back at square one, it feels like. How do we figure out those processes on an entirely different scale? You know, when I thought I had two employees or, you know, two part-time employees, I thought I was killing it. And now I'm like, oh my God, I need eight more of those people. Like how is this going to work? I have that feeling all the time. And I think as a small business owner, anytime the status quo changes, it's difficult. And so that has really been for me, the learning lesson in owning this company is taking things a day at a time, a step at a time, being able to communicate is key. So if it's an order that is going to be late, or we have a store that we love and they say, hey, can you get Mother's Day out? And the answer is, honestly, I'm so sorry. We are so backed up this year. We can't fulfill this order. Mm-hmm. Having that conversation up front instead of saying, yes, we can. And then you can't. And then they miss it. And then it doesn't get there. And then you look like a schmuck. You know, it's communicating up front to me has been one of the most helpful tools. Just honesty and transparency with your reps, with your clients, with your stores. You know, another thing we've done smartly is add rep groups slowly, because little things like paying them on time. Well, money's never an issue, but to pay a rep, you have to sit down, go through every single invoice that they've processed. You know, and there's really not that many automations for this. Figure out their percentage of each order. And that whole process can take 2-3 hours per rep group. And if you have 6-8 groups, all of a sudden that's 2 days worth of work. But you want to make sure you pay them on time. So it's like, maybe you shouldn't just add 55 reps right away. We didn't.
Well, and two, even before the payment stuff, I think I've talked with a few other people on the show about, you know, reps are fantastic. They're a fantastic way to scale your business, but it's definitely something that you need to be prepared for going in, meaning you need to know that you've got your systems in place to get orders out quickly, and you need to know that you've got the inventory to sample your reps, and you've got the sales tools to give to your reps. And, you know, there's just a lot of considerations to think through. So it's refreshing to hear you say that adding your reps in a slower pace helped with some of the growing pains of that, because I agree with you. I think it's one of the first hires people want to make when they start their business and start wholesaling. But frankly, I think that they need to wait a year or two. And
totally. And we had a few small reps to start. And then I didn't approach rep groups that were like the rep groups, you know, until I was further established and until I felt like not only could I, you know, fulfill on that volume, but that I had an ability to keep up. And even now we're not fully saturated across the US, and that's by choice. because I really want to build those relationships with our reps. I try to go to every show that they do. I try to really invest in them. And I think that that's way more important than just churning through different groups every year and, you know, not ever building a relationship.
Right. I was just going to say, it goes back to the relationships again. Like, I'd much rather work with one person and have a great working relationship with them over the long haul than be, you know, switching gears. Plus, and they prefer that too. So, all right. What advice do you have for up-and-comers, basically up-and-comer entrepreneurs in the product space? They don't have to necessarily be paper people, but like in general, running a product-based business is very different than running a service-based business. And what advice would you give to somebody just starting out?
Start a service-based business. No, what I would say is don't compare yourself. I think I'm guilty of this a lot. I think I look at companies in a business for 12 years and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and I'm like, Victoria, you've been in business for 3 years and you're doing great. You know, you have to really look at your own path. You know, a lot of people might come from money and they might be able to produce 500 new products a year. And you might not be able to do that. And that's okay. Grow your business at your pace with what you're comfortable with. And success is year over year growth. Doesn't matter if it's $5, doesn't matter if it's 500% year over year growth. You know what works for you. Don't put yourself in debt to compare yourself to other people. Don't think that you have to release 800 products to be a player in this industry. It's just not true. You know, we launched a whole new office line last year, and this year at NSS, we're launching 24 new cards, which is great. It's a lot of cards, but some people are launching 60 new cards, you know, and you have to just, you know where to spend your money, know where to spend your time, and know that your business is not like anybody else's.
Absolutely.
So I think that's, for me, been the biggest learning lesson too, is just knowing that we're still a baby company compared to a lot of companies. And that, you know, when I look back what we do now, 3 years ago, I would have been hiding under my bed. Like, you know, when I had to ship an order to Hong Kong the first time, it took me like 65 days. I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. DHL, what? And now we do that, you know, multiple times a day. So it's like, each time you have one of these new projects, you learn how to do it better.
Yeah.
And it's not as scary. And as you grow, the things you do down the road, you're going to be like amazed at yourself.
Yeah. And you will look back and you will say, wow, remember when I didn't know how to do that? And now I am taking care of that like a boss. So, you know, hey, it works. So what's next for Paper Epiphanies? What do you guys have on tap?
So we're doing a National Stationery Show in 2 weeks. We're launching some new items for Kiss My Pumps and then 24 new cards for that line. I will be having my first baby in September.
Yay!
Which will be a whole nother transitional period. Okay. So that'll be interesting. And then we're opening a bigger warehouse office space for the company in July, which is going to be great. It's going to give us room to hire more employees and do a little bit more efficient shipping and receiving and things like that, which I think will really help grow our business.
Absolutely. And it'll help too once this little baby comes.
Yeah, exactly.
Having those systems in place, it'll make it a lot more streamlined and easy for you. So, well, congrats. That's amazing.
You've got
a lot of great things on the horizon. And as I mentioned already, you've done an incredible job of growing this business in a short amount of time. I commend you on being so thoughtful and so, you know, recognizing that maybe slow growth is better than trying to turn it around quickly. Like, you've been very thoughtful, which I applaud you on. So,
thanks.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you online?
So paperepiphanies.com is our website with all of our product. And then follow us on Instagram is probably our biggest social media following, which is at Paper Epiphanies.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks,
I really appreciate
Katie.
It.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Hey guys, it's Katie Hunt from Trade Show Bootcamp, and I have some exciting news. You have all been patiently waiting for the return of our Paper Camp e-course, and I'm excited to tell you that it's here. This is a virtual program that will last for 5 weeks. We'll kick things off in September and head into October. You'll get new videos to watch each week on your own, and we'll have a live Q&A call every week with me and special guest experts. You gotta act fast because registration closes on September 15th. If you've been wanting to get your products on retail store shelves, if you want to launch or refine your wholesale program, or maybe you want to exhibit at large scale trade shows, this is the program for you. To learn more and register, head to tradeshowcamp.com and click on PaperCamp eCourse. That's tradeshowcamp.com, then PaperCamp eCourse. We look forward to having you there. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.